20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Overjoyed anytime I get to talk to Tyler Brook. You can find him, of course, on social media at Tyler D. Brook, as well as best available on YouTube. Tyler, it is great to be back chatting with you again, my friend. How are you doing?
Overjoyed, man. Like, I really appreciate that. I always love talking to you, Andy. It's good to be on. Thank you.
Yeah, it's always fun. You know your stuff. You know your Packers. You know your draft. So we're going to get you today on Packers and draft. It's going to work out perfect. Disclaimer to everybody first. We are recording this on Wednesday afternoon on February 18th. I think this is going to air on February 28th, but it could be any time in the next 2 weeks. I'm going to be on vacation, so you're going to hear this a lot from me. I'm banking up some episodes in advance. This is the day after Rich Bisaccia stepped down as special teams coordinator. You might be living in a world where they already have a new special teams coordinator, where Jeff Stoutland's the offensive line coach, where Rashawn Gary or Elton Jenkins have been cut. We do not live in that world yet, so forgive us for being 10 days probably behind where you are. But Tyler, with that being said, excited to break down a lot of different aspects of this offseason with you.
Yeah, me too. The Bisaccia news just came as a complete shock. The timing of it and everything, I'm still processing through that, but that's probably not relevant at the time this is out anymore. I'll just say, cliff notes, mixed emotions, at least more mixed than I think a lot of people are having.
I would have probably been more excited about it had it happened at the beginning of the cycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Happening where it did gives me some trepidation. It's hard to get worse, but it can, and we've seen it be worse. So,
We have.
I do think, let's just say he's a terrible special teams coordinator. Let's say he's one of the worst, and let's say whoever they get is a better special teams coordinator. I do think that there is legitimately something to all the talk of the culture that he brings to the organization. And I do have some real hesitation and trepidation of just that aspect of it being gone, because the GM, the coach, the assistant coaches, the players, everybody will wax poetic for just about forever about how awesome this guy is in the locker room and for the culture. It's tough for us on the outside to put, you know, too much into that, just because we don't get to see it on a day-to-day basis and we can't quantify it in any real way. But when everybody talks about it that glowingly, I feel like that has to be a loss to some extent.
I mean, before he was the Packers coordinator, he was one of the most highly respected special teams coordinators in football and one of the most beloved interim head coaches in like the last couple of decades during that stint with the Raiders. Correct. So I absolutely do not discount that portion of, you know, things that we have heard. And that part does stink. And, you know, when you're talking about culture stuff with a guy like Jonathan Gannon coming in, I would really like a little more intensity, culture driven, coaching staff. So,
although to be fair with Gannon, now that we are, discontinuing report cards being aired to the public, Jonathan Gannon on his report card, if you look at the Cardinals report card, it's just like, it's a brutal report card. And then Jonathan Gannon as a head coach was an A. I think he was overall.
I did not know that.
Yeah. He had a super high grade from the players as to his overall, culture and his job as a head coach. He graded better than Matt LaFleur actually did in Green Bay. So the players seem to really resonate and like Jonathan Gannon, even if the results didn't exist. Maybe something similar with Rich Bisaccia. I was actually stunned by that when I went back and looked at the grades for Arizona, and Gannon was very highly graded, at least a year ago when the grades came out, which would have been more relevant for what he did in 2024. Don't know how they felt after 2025.
I'll just never be able to shake off the viral clips of Gannon asking a bunch of millionaires who took the bus to work. It's still one of my favorite clips of all time. The Cardinals social media team did that man no favors.
They really did not. And then there's the zoom. Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's got some good ones.
It's Kendall Roy. It's just like from Succession, if you've ever seen it. Like, it's the exact energy. It really freaks me out.
It's not quite the Adam Gaze press conference where he's just like looking
that was just scary.
But there's something there. All right, let's get into it. Let's start with this offseason. I want to ask you, Tyler, just in general, where does your wish list start for the Packers this offseason? I think the three ones that we can obviously look at, defensive tackle, offensive line, corner, but what to you is your golden goose? What's the one that you would say, if you're putting your GM hat on, this is the one that has to be addressed, this is the one I have to take care of?
Oh, man. Those three, you hit the nail on the head, but for me, it is a nose tackle. I just think when Micah Parsons is healthy and like the version we saw of Lucas Van Ness at the tail end of the year, I mean, we saw early versions of this like, early in the season. The corners' jobs are so much easier when the pass rush is that good because you don't have to play anything deep. You can play off and then just trigger downhill on this underneath stuff. And when that defense works, what you need is a nose tackle to stop the run. And that was a killer for this Packers defense last year. I just need a big body in there that can hold his own. And I don't care if it's via a trade, a free agency, the draft, just get me like a, honestly, I would consider double dipping, and maybe I'm stepping on some questions here in a little bit, but like, I love the idea of like a Roy Lopez or one of these like journeyman veteran that are just rock solid. And then you can get a late day two, early day three nose. Cause that part of the defense needs to be bolstered so badly, because if you can plug the run in the middle and then you can rush the pass off the edges, the corners really gets a whole lot easier, because you're going to get into these obvious passing downs. The quarterback's not going to have time to throw it with Micah Parsons rushing after them. And you can just kind of play a little bit more confidently. And for as much as they get hated on, as far as a market value perspective, I honestly think the cornerback room's in a much better place than you might think, just because all of these guys are on such friendly deals outside of the Nate Hobbs contract.
And even the Hobbs one you can get out of if you want.
For sure.
To your point, there is a difference between having bad corners that are on bad contracts and having, you know, I don't even know if I want to go as far as bad, but you know, below average corners that are on reasonable contracts that you can get out of, or you can still pay a position. It's not like your money's already tied into a bunch of players at the spot. I think that is advantageous, at least for Green Bay. Going back to your pass rush comment, I still feel confident that Micah plus Wyatt plus LVN plus Guy, whether that's Aaron Sorrell, whether that's Colin Oliver, whether that's Warren Brinson, Carl Brooks, whoever that other guy is, fine, so be it, whatever. But that guy plus, again, a trio of LVN, Wyatt, and Micah is going to get to the quarterback.
Awesome. It's going to be awesome.
Yes, yeah. I still feel very confident in that group overall. Would I like more depth? Would I like more? Sure, absolutely. Everybody would. We saw what Seattle was able to do with them having players in waves that were coming in and rushing the passer. Awesome. Would love more of that. But I still feel confident with their top four rushing the quarterback. And to your point, I don't feel confident with Colby Wooden being the number one run stuffing nose tackle. I don't feel confident with Nazir Stackhouse. They need a big guy or two. And if they can get that and solidify that, even on early downs, if it is LVN, Micah, big guy, and like a Colby Wooden on the interior, I feel really good.
I feel pretty solid about that. Yeah.
I feel really good about that too. So I just think that solves a lot of problems. I think it, you know, cleans up Edrian Cooper on the second level. I think it cleans up whoever the other linebacker is, whether it's Quay, McDuffie, Hopper, or other. And like you said, on obvious passing downs, if that pass rush can get there, your corners are going to hold up, especially when you have Evan Williams, Avery McKinney playing behind them, which do a lot of heavy lifting as well.
Yeah, I mean, this defense structurally is in pretty good shape. Even if you part ways with Gary, you can't re-sign Quay. Like, there are obviously holes, but there's so much of the structure of the defense that feels so good. And I'm still very high on LVN. The most jarring stat that I've seen is that LVN is still younger than Akeem Mezidor out of Miami, who is a potential first-round pick in this draft. Like, I think it's good perspective for just like how much LVN's yet to scratch the surface. And for as much as he played banged up this year, I thought the tail end of the year was outstanding for him.
So as we look at attacking these positions, offensive line, defensive tackle, corner, well, let me ask you this, because you've been studying the draft quite a bit. Where do you see some of the overall strengths of this draft? And is Green Bay better off maybe attacking some of these positions in the draft? It doesn't exactly work this way. It's not like you can, I actually think it would be better if the draft happened first and then you could address needs sort of after in free agency. It doesn't work that way. You draft later and then you hit free agency first. So if they like a free agent, they're going to go and attack it. And then you can't expect like, yeah, we think the cornerback room is going to be deep, so we're going to wait till the second round to get one. And then all of a sudden you have a run on it and they can't get that guy. And now you're screwed. But just in general, what would you feel more comfortable maybe saying, yes, I think the draft can cure some of these ailments? And what would you say, hey, maybe they need to attack this in free agency?
So I'm more than comfortable at cornerback waiting for the draft. I mean, you know, A, you probably don't need a body in theory. if you know, it's not an absolute necessity, at least in my eyes. But if you want to add a body, I actually think there's a ton of day two corners. Justice and I actually spoke about that on Draft Talk this week, just about the sheer depth. I mean, I've watched 18 corners at this point, and I like all of them.
I think it's a good class.
It is a good class. It's a fun class too. Just a lot of different styles and body types, and you know, I think there's a handful of guys there I'd like to see as Packers. I wouldn't mind using that second round pick on a couple of them if they fell. I would probably prefer free agency on defensive line. There's a couple noses I like, but as far as value, I feel like it's a pretty sharp drop off after the first. I mean, I could pull up my board real quick, but you know, there's a handful of guys I really like that I just don't think are going to get to the Packers in the second round. And then after maybe DL, I'm looking at like seven, like Daryl Jackson Jr. out of Florida State. Feels like there's kind of a sharp drop off. You could find a Tim Keenan or a Dante Corleone, the Godfather, in day three. But I think I'd prefer just having some kind of proven commodity there in a journeyman veteran. I think there's going to be a handful of noses available in free agency, roster cuts, things like that. I think they could find one realistically in free agency. And then offensive line, I'm just Packers pilled at this point. You have to draft offensive linemen every year. And I mean, their track record, Jordan Morgan still, you know, TBD, but like Zach Tom kind of came out of nowhere. Justice and I were obsessed with that kid coming out of Wake Forest. Here he is now when healthy, you know, he's a potential borderline Pro Bowl, all pro right tackle. Like they have a proven track record of finding useful guys in later rounds of the offensive line. And this is a really good tackle class. There's a couple guys who are like, if it doesn't work out with Morgan, taking like an Emil Wagner out of Notre Dame. It's like kind of this project swing tackle. He was playing both sides when I was down in Dallas for the Shrine Bowl, and I thought he looked really good, really toolsy. It's a really good tackle class. And don't let anyone tell you that this draft isn't good just because there's one quarterback. There's some positions that are really fun.
We'll be right back. So I remember the very first time that drinking hit me differently. I was drinking responsibly the night before and we had young kids at the time, and I woke up with my son crying in bed and just didn't feel right. It was a very harsh reminder that after the age of 30, even responsibly drinking alcohol will make you feel less than 100% the next day. The more I looked into it, the more I realized that even a few alcoholic drinks will crush your sleep and your next day readiness. That's why I'm obsessed with Cheers Restore. Cheers Restore is a dual action after alcohol aid. Its ingredients support both your brain and your liver after consuming alcohol. Cheers was originally invented by a student at Princeton and was designed for how alcohol actually affects your body, not just dehydration. And you don't have to just take my word for it. Cheers has appeared on Shark Tank and is sold in over 30,000 stores, and they've already sold over 50 million doses. And Cheers is backed by doctors, PhDs, and over 1,000 verified clinicians who share it with their patients. Cheers promise is simple. All you do is take three capsules after your last drink or before bed, and you'll feel about 50% better the next day or your money back. That's why it's same night out, way better morning with Cheers. For a limited time, our listeners are getting 20% off their entire order by using code PACKADAY at cheershealth.com. Just head to cheershealth.com and use code PACKADAY for 20% off. After your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that PACKADAY sent you.
I do think, like, if you look at like the top five, if you're picking in the top five, you're probably thinking, I wish this was just a little bit better. Yeah. But I do think as you get, you know, even late day one and then day two, day three, day four, we also do this every year of like, oh, yep, draft isn't quite as deep as it usually. And then you get to the draft and it's like all these guys are sought after and there's first round grades and everything is almost exactly what you would expect it to be.
Yeah. And then Nick Emenwor is a second round pick and is a transformational piece of a Super Bowl winning defense. So like, yeah, there's going to be value in these later rounds.
You can always find guys like there will be all pros that come out of this draft. There will be Pro Bowlers that come out of this draft. They're not all going to be in the top five. A lot of them are going to be on day two or three.
It's my favorite part of the draft. I love the guys that come out of nowhere. It's one of those fun things. Cause if you can spot that guy on film and you're like, I don't know if he's a first rounder, I just love the way he plays. And then he just blossoms wherever he is. It's one of the more fun parts about doing this.
Totally agree. Could not agree more. Let's talk about that corner class a little bit. Walk through some names, you know, day two specifically, second, third round. We walked through this with Justice. Well, as people are listening to this, probably not like two weeks ago, but you know, some of the names, what are some that have caught your interest, piqued your interest?
So I'm sure Justice already talked about this guy because he sold me on him. It's Davidson Igbinosin out of Ohio State. And, you know, I'm a pretty big college football fan, especially Big Ten. And like I was pilled to stay away from him from this 2024 season where he was just like the most penalized player in college football, really gave me the ick. And then you go back and turn on the tape from this year and it's like a 6'2" lengthy corner that is just crazy athletic. And he didn't lose that physicality. He definitely cut down the penalties, but he stays physical and competitive. And I think the fact that he's kept that edge while like limiting the penalties is a huge like sign of growth for me. I have him as CB6. Like I have him ahead of a lot of these like names. They're getting a lot of media hype. He is one of these guys. Like if he was a Packers second round pick, like we're dancing out here. Like I think the big thing I'm looking at for draft targets for the Packers at corner specifically, and this is just personal for me, I just want a different body type. There's just a lot of kind of light smalls on this group. Yeah. And if we're talking about another guy that can kind of like break out of that, a name I'm thinking of is Julian Neal. This is like a former basketball player, wide receiver out of Arkansas, 6'2", 208. And, you know, maybe a little stiff. I would not trust him totally in like zone, in man coverage, but like long strider that uses that length, and he is fearless against the run. And I just love a competitive guy like that and that different kind of body type, kind of some length. Maybe
last time they went to a basketball player in the second round at corner, it didn't work very well with Quentin Rollins. So it's off the table. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, Quentin Rollins, man. There's so many corners I got excited about in Green Bay that didn't pan out.
Quentin Rollins, Josh Jackson, Demaryius Randall.
Wow, yeah. Josh Jackson.
Of course, the one that did, Casey Hayward, that we all loved, then he goes elsewhere. And
he was awesome. He's incredible.
Yep.
Yeah, those names I have. I mean, if we're just going, you know, maybe a different style, I wouldn't take any of the slots. Like they already have two guys competing for one position there. Devin Moore's another super interesting one out of Florida. Yes, he's 6'3", 198. I just think he's not as physical as I'd hope for a guy of that size. But I do like him as one of these zone corners, and like you can put him in the flat and he's just got that size and length to potentially that window over him. He can just kind of like still occupy because of his size. That was a super interesting one to me as well.
Maybe not the most physical, but only 6 career missed tackles.
Yeah.
He's had no penalties in the last 2 years combined, which again, maybe sometimes you need a little of that physicality or whatever, but still no penalties in 2 years is pretty impressive. Obviously he's 6'3", 198, so he's not a small dude. Overall, I love his ball skills and just a really smart football player, great instincts, chased down a fumble or like he chased down a player and forced a fumble right around the goal line. Just a really fun player.
Yeah, it is a really fun class, and I feel like I barely scratched the surface watching 18 of these guys. I'm sure there's guys flying under the radar that, you know, could potentially be some day 3 picks, but we're not even at the combine yet. The fact that I've watched like close to 130 guys at this point, I'm pretty psyched about. So hopefully we get some day 3 guys by the time draft rolls around.
I know we are still a pretty decent ways away from the draft, but it'll be here before you know it. But in early version, do you have a draft crush at pick 52 that you're just like, if this guy's there, I'm geeking out any position?
Man, I love that question. this is probably a guy I'm higher on the most, but I really like the big citrus out of Iowa State, Dominic Orange.
Yep.
6'4", 325. I think he's, you know, way more athletic than you expect for a 325-pound guy. He makes a lot of splash plays with his athleticism and power. Got some questions about the length and stamina. So I think at least early on, he might be contained to a rotational role at nose, but like, I think the splash plays and the impact he has at the point of attack. Like I love a big body that not only is powerful, but has a little bit of juice to him. And like, I know everyone's talking about Lee Hunter. I don't expect Lee Hunter to be there in round 2, but I really liked what I saw from Dominic Orange.
Yeah. He's a really fun player too. I'm just wondering, all right. So what the Packers have, let's do this. If they were able to move up, let's say they use their second and fourth round picks, pick 52 in their fourth, and they moved up to the top of round 2. So they bumped all the way up to pick 33. The player was there at 33 that they had a high for like a first round grade or borderline first round grade on, and they just couldn't pass it up. Who are you trading up for in this draft?
You're breaking my brain right now. Oh my gosh. I mean, I would love the idea of getting an interior guy like an Emmanuel Pregnon out of Oregon, one of these high IQ, athletic ability and really strong hands. Like, offensive line is sneaky, kind of hanging by a thread if guys don't pan out a certain way. And I'd love a guard that can compete with Belton for reps because, like, I'm still not totally sold on Belton as a starter. Like him as a backup. But Emmanuel Pregnon, man, like not everyone's cup of tea. I'm super high on him. I've mocked him in the first round, late first round recently. I think he's a hell of a player that, you know, I love an offensive lineman with big old mitts that can, like, when he latches on you, you're just not getting to disengage. He's one of those guys. And for, you know, maybe a little bit on the stiffer side, he has this really interesting just comfortability timing combo block. So he'll like displace a lineman and then climb to that second level pretty easily for a guy that's a little, you know, clunky. But I just think he's one of these power guys that feels like a big upgrade over Belton.
Can I just say that's one of the things in the NFL that I watch on tape every Sunday that you would think would be pretty ingrained in offensive linemen.
It's hard.
That first block and then climbing to the second level and sort of having that timing down. And it is not. It really is something that if somebody's good at it, like you really can take it for granted really, really quick, because I see so many times they either rush to get to the second level and it's just like a cursory, like kind of like, oh, I tagged them and like really didn't do anything. Or they spend too much time engaging in the initial block. And by the time they get to the second level, the linebacker is already in the backfield and has gone and made a play or equal with them and made a play. It is not something that you should take for granted at the NFL level. I see mistakes with it all the time.
Listen, I gained a new appreciation for coaching high school football because, like, you know, coaching receivers in Indy, we're doing all this running. And then you turn and look at the O-lineman and they're just focusing on like these like walking through steps. And basically it's supposed to be every step is supposed to be having your inside of your foot pointed at the defender. And so they just literally like rep that to get comfortable with it. And then when you watch combo blocks, you start to really understand why that stuff's so important.
It's so important. And it's not easy. Like it seems inherently like something that would be go block one guy, then go block the other. And it's just, it doesn't work, so many moving pieces,
and they're all moving different directions. Yeah. It's not easy.
It very much is not. I'm glad I don't have to do it. I'll just put it there. My mind says like this, like as I'm like watching it on tape, I'm like, why didn't you just do this? But I'm glad I don't have that assignment of trying to block two players on one play. We talked draft. I do want to get your take on free agency as well. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting, I guess is the best way to put it, free agent class. It's not top heavy. It's not super deep either. It's okay. It's not great. But let's say Green Bay does make that sort of splash in free agency that maybe they can go get one guy. Maybe it's not going to be 20 mil per year, but maybe they take a swing at somebody 15, 16 mil per year. Who are you banging the drum for? Who do you want to take a swing at?
Oh, man. Dude, I've been so draft-pilled that this is a hard one for me. And as a Packers fan, I just never have high hopes on free agency.
That's not like fair anymore, right? Because
no, because the Micah Parsons trade, they made some big swings. Well, not only
that, but like Josh Jacobs, Xavier McKinney, Zadarius, Adrian Amos. And I know we didn't, you know, maybe like love it, but Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs in one offseason.
Big spending,
pretty big spend, too.
You're totally right on that regard. It's just, I've looked at the cap situation and, you know, my palate has been guys like Roy Lopez. I've been like, get me a journeyman, a veteran, and I'll be happy.
Lopez, by the way, who played in Gannon's system for a year in Arizona with Gannon too. So not
listen,
not,
listen. Yeah. Yeah. Just any kind of nose tackle that I could be like, all right, he has a proven track record. I would trust some kind of linebacker that can finally freaking play zone coverage and get depth and actually get into throwing windows would be really nice. These are just vague things I'm thinking about. I think they've kind of found their free agent alignment. I'm cool with draft and develop, but Darren Kennard is kind of a sneaky, really good addition there. So I'm not picky, man. I know the draft situation. I'm still happy about the Micah Parsons trade last year. So like, I don't think this team has as many holes as a lot of people want to believe. And I think they're still in a pretty good place.
I'm with you. I know health is not guaranteed.
No.
You band-aid four players that were super important and three more will get hurt this year that are also super important. That's just how this thing works. But man, when you look at this team on paper still, you still feel really, really good about where they're at and what they can do. Of course, they can stay healthy. Just got to build a little bit more depth, plug a couple holes here or there, and they've got the resources to do it. This is one of those off seasons that you look at on paper and you're like, well, they don't have a ton of money to spend. They don't have a first round pick, but they also don't have a ton of holes. And Micah Parsons, again, still sort of a huge part of this offseason as well, giving away that first round pick or trading away, I should say. So yeah, overall, I'm still very intrigued and excited about what they can do this offseason.
Listen, just through Micah, all things are possible. Am I right? It's like, I cannot wait for him to get healthy and back on the field. It was some of the most fun football I've gotten to watch as a Packers fan.
And you've got a great quarterback and an elite defender. That's a great place to start any franchise. And you just have to fill in a couple gaps after that. And Green Bay's got a lot of really talented players. I'm still super excited.
Careful, Andy. We're already back on the "Is Jordan Love actually good?" discourse. And it's only been like a month. I can't believe we're already back there. We're already back.
I can't do it.
I can't believe it's debate anymore. That's the part that just drives me nuts.
The thing is like, as a fan, as an analyst, whatever, I don't really care. It's whatever. Every fan can have their own opinions. Mm-hmm. I just like, what does Jordan have to do to gain their respect
that he deserves, because he's been like, he's done everything asked of him in clutch moments. He was as clutch as could possibly be.
He was sensational in the Bearskin they lost.
It was the best playoff performance of any quarterback this year was Jordan Love against the Bears. Yeah, Bears defense isn't great, whatever. He still played tremendous in that game. Like, he's done everything this year that you could ask him to do. And I don't know what it, I mean. I get it. I know what it's going to take. It's going to take winning a Super Bowl and being Super Bowl MVP and winning an MVP in the league, I guess, for him to get his flowers. But man, even if he doesn't do those things, I just wish there was a level of respect for how damn good that dude has played. We'll be right back.
I love that he's found his style. I think that's what it felt like this year, is he finally felt comfortable. And I got to talk to Sean Mannion a little bit, the Shrine Bowl, like the throwing off the back foot stuff. He's like, listen, we know it's not like on paper what needs to be done, but we know he can do it. And there are situations where he has to, and we're fine with it. And it just felt like that kind of became his identity, and it worked. And I'm fine with, you know, I think I'm very happy to see that he's found stylistically the player he's going to be.
It's a phenomenal point, and I'm glad you brought this up, because year one as a starter, first half of the season gets a little bit just, you could just tell they had, you know, they kind of handcuffed him a little bit. They didn't give him free rein. You could just tell he was kind of thinking through some things. And then the second half, they opened it up, and you could tell that almost the directive was grip and rip, just rip the ball, do what you think is best. And he had a ton of success. But then he comes back in year two, and the first injuries played a major part. Year two as a starter, that first half of the year, he threw a lot of interceptions.
Yep.
And you could tell there was the game where he had the pick six against the Lions. And I was in the press conference at home after that game. I think it was right before the bye week. And you could tell that was the most that you could tell. Like, he was like, I'm letting my team down. Like, I've got to get this fixed. Like, it's not acceptable. Like, you could tell it was wearing on him. And in the second half of the season, he played an extremely conservative brand of football, did not turn the ball over, but you didn't get those big Jordan Love explosive plays like we came accustomed to, especially at the end of 23. And then I thought 2025, and I said it all going into the year, was going to be sort of the defining year for Jordan. Like, this is who you're probably going to get moving forward. And he really found a way to blend the aggressive big play mentality without really turning the ball over at all. And that is a extremely good sign moving forward.
Listen, a fully healthy Christian Watson, a Dontavian Wicks, a Jaden Reed, and a Matthew Golden, Tucker Kraft. Like, this passing game is going to have crazy weapons next year. And I will not quit you, Matthew Golden. I still believe, man. Like, it's going to happen.
He's just scratching the surface. We did not see a game where they had a full complement of weapons. The Death Star was never fully operational. When Kraft was in, Watson was out. When Watson was in, Kraft was out. Reed missed a huge chunk in the middle. Matthew Golden really didn't kind of get going until the final game of the season. Yeah, so they were nowhere near. And Jacobs was beat up all year. Even in Jordan had some injuries again. So Tom.
What a nightmare. Every time we list him out, it's just like, how is it this many injuries?
It's incredible. I know. It's insane. Speaking of that, though, and with Jordan, he has had some injury issues in each of the last couple seasons. He has missed games, and Malik Willis has done an unbelievable job of coming in and keeping everything not only steady, but going out and winning legitimately important football games. They're not in the playoffs in 2024 without Malik Willis, and he did such a great job filling in 2025 as well. He's gone. I think we all know that. What does Green Bay do? Are you okay with the Desmond Ridder situation? Do you want a draft pick? Do you want a free agent? Do you want to trade? How important is that backup role?
I mean, clearly with the Packers, it's important. And it feels like they're one of the few coaching staffs that has the palate, or like, is okay with having a like almost separate playbook when you have a backup in. And I would really like to see a similar type of play style at that backup, where you can have this kind of run heavy, because it does keep defenses on their toes. Yep. And it opens the way for explosive passes, because they are now trying to plan for the run and QB run. They try to start loading the box a little bit. And frankly, you know, I would take a draft pick over these guys. It's not pretty, and these are guys that are not going to be awesome right away, but I love the idea of developing a couple. But the one I keep circling is Talon Green out of Arkansas. He's a 6'6 dual threat guy. And like, we already have one silly body quarterback. Why not make it two on the roster? He is so goofy with the way he throws. I don't love the mechanics or anything, but like, he is so gifted. The ball flies out of his hands. He is a tank when he runs. For a 6'6 dude, I've seen him hurdle a defender as a runner. He's got all kinds of crazy skill set. I just think he needs to clean up so much mechanically. And like, Green Bay feels like the perfect fit of like, he could do a little of the Jordan stuff, but also a little of the Malik stuff, that if he had to play, I would not want him to play as a rookie, but like if he had to play, there's enough versatility in there that you can keep a defense at least guessing. And I just think the tools are too interesting to pass up on if you're looking on that day three for a developmental backup. He just at least has more upside than Ritter and Kyle McCord are just boring, man. Let's be real.
Very much so. I have heard, you have it on good source. The Packers are actually looking into RAS scores this year, but it's relatively athletic silly bodies is what they're looking for. In all aspects, just silly bodies across the board is what they're looking for.
They're going to draft a wacky inflatable guy from the car shows. Yeah.
Yes. That's actually the, if you look at the handbook of what they're looking for, that's actually the model on the top of it. So sign me up for all the silly bodies. I will gladly take that. Before we get you out of here, there's already some angst and frustration in the fan base of the off season. It hasn't even started the new league year. And, you know, they didn't fire Bisaccia. They didn't fire LaFleur. They didn't fire Goody. They didn't fire everybody. They have a lot of new coaches on the staff, but, the powers that be are there. There's apparently a level of complacency and things like that. To be fair, Green Bay has not been able to get over the hump over the last handful of seasons. Well, in the Matt LaFleur era, they have not been able to take it that additional step. They have not had the playoff success. Where are you at? Obviously, it's still early in the process. We don't know what's going to happen in free agency, the draft, trades, et cetera. This roster is nowhere near finished at the moment. But what do they need to do? And what gives you optimism that they can actually take that step in 2026 to be that team that they need to be?
I think I just need a sense of urgency from everyone. I think that was kind of the motto last year, but I think it's gotten way more real this year, because I think you're like, you know, yes, sense of urgency sounds great, but when everything at the beginning of the year sounds like, oh, wow, we're the Super Bowl contenders, you can kind of take the foot off the gas a little bit. I think that's kind of a realization this team felt. And maybe some of that placency on the bright side, like they lost a lot of coaches because of Jeff Hafley leaving and taking, you know, a huge chunk of the staff, you know, offensive guys leaving, including Sean Mannion. I think just getting some new voices in that building on both offense, defense, and now even special teams could be viewed as a good thing if these hit right. Just getting some fresh perspectives and like that, because it's been kind of the same, at least on the offensive side, like kind of the same staff for a while. The idea of getting new voices in there at least has me hopeful. And like, I'm not going to have a real good feel on this until free agency and the draft's over, but I'll always pick optimism at this point of the year over, you know, doom and gloom. Cause I don't know how that's productive as a fan, but it also just like, I feel like that kind of seeps into your personal life. And I think one of the things I've always done, at least on the YouTube side of things, I'm always trying to stay positive. I do winners. I don't do winners and losers. I just think I've noticed that's helped me personally as well, in my life. So especially at this time when there's no football on, I mean, like, just choose to be happy. That's my biggest thing I can take away.
It's the off season. Hope should be springing eternal at this point 100%. In time. Nobody's saying everything's been perfect. Nobody's saying everything's going to get cured overnight, but it's a fun time of year. I'm really excited for it. I know I'm going to be covering you, or following you, I should say, over on Best Available on YouTube. And of course your social media channel at Tyler D. Brook. Tyler, what else you want to plug before we get out of here?
I'm still running an Acme packing company. I'll have some stuff. I'll be, oh gosh, now we're trying to think about a week in the future. I'll be at the combine. I think it'll still be going on when we publish this. So just stay tuned while I'm over there talking to people and doing stuff. And then I'm always on Twitter, whether it's giving really hardcore draft analysis or just sharing the stupidest meme you've ever seen.
Love it. Can't wait for any of those things. Go follow him again at Tyler D. Brook. Enjoy the combine, my friend. I have to do that at some point. I have to do Senior Bowl combine at some point.
We will get dinner if you come down. I will buy you dinner. I'll take you down to some of the nice places and we'll do it.
All right. I might have to do that next year. Either way, I'm looking forward to all of your coverage. Cannot wait for it. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. Again, at Tyler D. Brook, acmepackingcompany.com. Best Available over on YouTube. We will see you guys very, very soon. But until next time, and as always, Go Pack Go.